Hey there, listeners. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. We're going to be hosting a live seminar. It's going to be held by video on June 19th. That's Wednesday, June 19th. It'll be 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be 90 minutes. This first seminar is hosted by Amgen. We're going to have three different team members with three different roles, with three different backgrounds, all veterans on the live panel. And just like on the show, I'm going to do 45 minutes of Q&A with the three of them. And then we're going to take 45 minutes and open it up to the audience to answer any and all questions that you have. If you have any interest whatsoever in about Amgen, about the biotech and medical services industry, about functional roles that are universal across every industry, I'd really encourage you to join. I would love to see you there, add some faces to some names, and have your participation. I think you're going to learn a lot, and we're very, very excited to kick this off. And also very grateful for Amgen's support, because by sponsoring this panel, they're helping us expand our work over here at Beyond the Uniform. And all of this is 100% free for you to join. So costs nothing. You can register through our newsletter, or look for a link on the site. Hope to see you there. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to challenge and support military veterans to succeed in their post-service career. Today is episode number 274 with Jeffrey Roberts.
Well, the simplest way is saying that my company is basically the Uber for small satellites. So don't be afraid to pursue your dreams. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out. I got that. But sometimes it does. And don't let any feelings of inadequacy or unpreparedness prevent you from pursuing what you are interested in and what you are passionate about. And you'll find the right path that is open to you. The first job I took in this industry wasn't my ideal job. I wanted to be building spacecraft. But the only job that I had available was working at a launch complex. It turned out to be a great experience. It got my foot in the door so I could really understand the industry and lead me to what I'm doing now, which is exactly what I wanted to be doing.
Jeffrey works at a company that is the Uber for small satellites. This is an eye-opening interview about the space industry and why veterans should consider a career in this rapidly expanding space. Sorry, I had to go there. We talk about program management, about work-life balance with a demanding job, the reserves, and five kids. We talk about the reserves and the pros and cons of remaining in the reserves, and we go through a very detailed breakdown of the space industry, which is fascinating. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you will find links to everything we discuss, including there's about four or five different related episodes to this, one about space, one about crypto, which is, I think you'll find, has a lot of overlap with this interview. Special thanks to those of you who have submitted a review on Apple Podcasts, in particular, Markian Sick, who said, members of the military can't forget that no matter how long they plan on making their military career, they will one day no longer be in the military. Learning about opportunities for transition is paramount. Subscribe now. Thank you, Markian, and to all of you who have submitted positive reviews on Apple Podcasts. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Jeff. Well, joining me today, normally in Seattle area, but on vacation in Hawaii, is Jeff Roberts. Jeff, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Justin.
So for listeners, quick disclaimer, I'm a sci-fi junkie and love everything space-related. My wife, whenever I'm reading or watching something sci-fi related, she says, are you reading about spaceships? So it is a special treat to be meeting with Jeff today. He is a mission director at Spaceflight Industries, which enables timely and affordable access to space as well as capabilities to look at our planet in real time in every spectrum. He started out at West Point and served in the Army for over 8 years, including deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, most recently as an Airborne Rifle Company XO. He has served as a reservist and guardsman and holds a Master's of Science in Astronautical Engineering. And last but not least, he is married with five kids. Four of them are deployment babies. So, Jeff, to start things off, take us back. I know you've been extremely active in the National Guard and in the reserves. But take us back to when you left the Army. What was that process like? What was the transition like? And how did you pursue the career that you ultimately found?
Well, so getting out after 8 years of active duty was a tough decision. But this was, again, in 2008, in the middle of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. I joined before 9/11 happened, and it wasn't my plan to be gone every other year in the Middle East, especially trying to start a family. So it's really family considerations that caused me to leave active duty. But as you said, I still maintain my presence in the reserves and National Guard throughout my career because I love serving in the military. I love the mission, love working with soldiers. And that's something I wanted to continue with. And I always knew I wanted to pursue an aerospace engineering degree if the opportunity presented itself. When I got my aerospace degree, undergraduate degree at West Point, being an Army guy, they said, great, now you can be a paratrooper, because that's about all they have for people with aerospace degrees. So when I left, I was lucky enough to find a company called Alaska Aerospace. I was stationed in Alaska. It allowed me to stay local, which was important for family considerations. And there are many veterans within Alaska Aerospace itself. So they made me feel very welcome. So the transition wasn't as hard as I thought. It was a little bit difficult trying to figure out what clothes to wear every morning. But with my wife's help, she put out a list of, hey, you wear this shirt with these pants. And so I was I looked good every day. But it felt like I was on TDY. And it felt that way for several years. Like I was always going to go back to the service. This was just a detour. But it ended up being a great experience with Alaska Aerospace, worked there for 8 years, launching rockets from Kodiak Island, and then made a transition 3 years ago to spaceflight. Throughout that time, I continued serving in the reserves as a space operation officer, then in the Alaska National Guard, which I had the privilege of doing a battalion command. And now I'm back as a space operations officer, again, in the reserves, based off of the new opportunities that are presented with the pending establishment of U.S. Space Command and potentially the Space Force.
Mm. What drew you to this industry initially?
Well, that's like you, I'm very interested in sci-fi and space exploration. You know, I didn't want to just read about it. I want to be part of it. And I know we're far away from, Star Wars and Star Trek type space travel. But every step that we take on that path, I think humanity's future is in the stars, that there's a lot out there for humanity to do, as well as find solutions to problems that we face here on Earth. So it's really a privilege to be participating in this industry. Hmm.
I love that. I mean, I remember a conversation I had a long time ago with a friend, but the way he put it to me was like, hey, you know, long, long, long term, the sun is going out. You know, eventually we have to get beyond our solar system. And the only way that we do that is, you know, that's millions of years away. But the only way we do that is by getting off our planet. We have all of our eggs in one basket right now. So we need to diversify. It's good investment theory. And so what you're doing connects with me. I think it really is in the long-term interest of our species survival to be able to scatter across the stars.
Yeah, definitely. And don't forget the real life aspects for people here on Earth, the benefits that come from space exploration and working in the space economy. That's really at its infantile phase right now, but it's going to be rapidly expanding and providing opportunities for people here on Earth. Mm.
So if you bumped into a fellow reservist or you bump into someone who's on active duty and they said, Jeff, what do you do for a living? How do you explain that to them?
Well, the simplest way is saying that my company is basically the Uber for small satellites. So small satellites who need to get a ride to space, they can't afford to buy a $60 million rocket or a $30 million rocket, especially when their satellites are the size of a loaf of bread. So what we do is we buy excess capacity on rockets. So if a rocket can lift 1,000 pounds to space, but their customers only have 900 pounds, well, we buy that extra 100 pounds of capacity and we'll farm it out to various companies that can use that capacity to go to that orbit. So that's the simplest way of putting what the company does. In my role as mission director, that means I actually run these missions. So I'm working with the rocket providers, figuring out, you know, knowing what their schedule is, because no rocket ever launches on time. So making sure I understand their schedule, their readiness. I also work with customers to make sure their spacecraft are going to be ready, that they do all the testing that's required before they're allowed to be put on the rocket, and they do all their licensing, of course. And then we arrange all the logistics, shipping to the launch site, doing the integration activities, making sure they have the right separation system, because once you get to space, you need some way to detach from the rocket. That's actually a very complicated part. And making sure the customers have a good experience as they go through this process, because there's many frustrations, whether it's hang up with licensing or dealing with some technical issues or just continuous delays. It's not a very mature industry at this point. It's still very much developing, and it doesn't work like FedEx yet, but we're trying to get there.
Mm. So it sounds like a strong thread of logistics and operations with a very big flavor of technology wrapped around everything. Is that fair?
Yeah, you got it exactly right. In fact, what we look for mission managers and mission directors are basically program managers with a technical background who are good at leadership opportunities and working with customers.
That's great. If someone listening is on active duty and this really resonates, what advice do you have for them? Because what you're describing seems relevant to many veterans. Like I think most of us have strong operational experience, strong logistics. We're used to structure and then technology. I think that even if listeners don't view themselves as a technologist, you do a lot with technology you might not even know. But if someone listening is interested in this sort of career, what advice do you have for them about getting from active duty into a role like yours?
Well, one thing that I did that worked out pretty well is I started subscribing to a couple periodicals that deal with the industry. So Aviation Week and Space Technology, that's one of the key periodicals I would recommend picking up. And that will kind of expose you to both business and operations and companies that are in this industry. I mean, everyone knows the Boeings, Lockheeds, but there's so many new space companies out there that you won't know if you're not inside the industry, but they are explained in some of these periodicals. Another good one is Space News. It deals specifically with the space industry. Those are two very good publications that will expose you to it. And as an active duty guy, you'll say, hey, this is really interesting. I'd like to learn more about this. And then you can do your own independent research.
That's great. That's great. And for listeners in the show notes, I'll add links to both of those.
Great.
What about with I'm curious. Okay, so I've got a 2-month-old. I'm getting a little flavor of what that's like. You've got 5 kids. You've got what seems like an extremely demanding career, and then you've got reserves and all this other stuff. How do you juggle all that? What does your work-life balance look like?
Well, first of all, I have a really awesome wife, so that goes without saying. But we definitely look at this is a partnership. It's not that just she deals with the kids, I deal with work. We try to, I have a big family because I like spending time with them. And sometimes it is really challenging, that work-life balance. But I've been very well supported in this industry. The industry veterans who I've worked for, they've acknowledged that, hey, it's good to have a work-life balance. They don't expect me at work, 80 hours a week. But when we're doing a launch campaign, sometimes you're going to be deployed for a month, solid, working, 16-hour days, very much like any of us have experienced on deployments, to get the job done. And then once that's done, you get to spend some time off with the family. That's what I'm doing right now after completing a big mission back in December. So it is definitely challenging. And I would encourage people to look at their workload. A couple of years ago, it was really stressful with me starting this new job, pursuing my master's degree, battalion command in the National Guard, which isn't 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. It's more than that, as well as having our 5th kid. That was a really stressful time, but it's good communication with your spouse, with the family. And definitely blocking off time for the family like you would block off time for meetings or other key events. You just have to do that.
That's great. I'm just flinching thinking of that. It's just, I feel like I do a lot. And hearing you say that, I'm like, man, that's intense. But it's I can imagine the ability to prioritize, the ability to set boundaries makes that more manageable. And I can also imagine that you get something out of each of these things, and it makes you more present and more passionate about whatever you're doing. And one question I had about that is, you know, what's your thoughts on reserves or the guards? Like, what do you – I don't want to make it transactional. Like, what do you get out of that? Because I can understand how you're giving up quite a lot to continue to do that.
Well, that's something that I struggle with even today, because the guard and reserves does take away time from your family, and to some extent a little bit from your job as well. So you definitely need an employer who's supportive and understanding of what you do in the guard and reserves. But more so, you need a family who understands as well. It's the benefit. I love working with soldiers. That's why I joined the National Guard. It got me back with soldiers, which I'd missed since active duty time. And it's just a privilege to lead those people and develop soldiers and to achieve really great things. I mean, watching a infantry battalion night live fire at negative 20 degrees in Alaska, watching them storm the objective and lay their patterns of fire and sectors of fire just right. It's a great thing to know that you've participated in that and planned it. With reserves, I find that a lot more technical. You're not with soldiers as much, but it gives you some other opportunities that you might not have. In fact, my job now with spaceflight is directly related to the time I served at Operationally Responsive Space as a reservist out of Kirtland Air Force Base. I did a weekend of my 2 weeks duty down there, made some great contacts. And it turns out later, those people transitioned to the civilian sector, and that's how I was able to get my job with spaceflight. So the reserves also, it fills that need to serve my country, as well as opportunities for me to grow professionally. And that's what I really get out of it.
That's great. And then I'm also thinking of the person listening who's interested in this industry. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you're unique in that you did something somewhat tangential to this in the military. So it wasn't, you know, a radical department. Well, I don't know. I'm actually ready for you to push back significantly on that. So that's one thought. It's like somewhat related to what you did in the military. So I'm wondering if someone is, you know, like me on submarines, it has nothing to do with this. Is that going to prohibit them from doing it? And then you also have significant education that I imagine would make it ideal for someone to hire you. So I'm wondering, maybe someone studied political science as an undergrad, they don't have an advanced degree. Could you kind of speak to how they can make themselves more of a appealing hire for someone in this industry?
Well, certainly. So service in the Guard and Reserves, I'd like to generally categorize it in two. One, it's you're doing it completely because you love it. So me doing the infantry stuff, that really doesn't have a lot of relationship to space, but I love doing it, and it continued to build my leadership and management skills. So there is the connection. When I was am a reservist with the space forces, that had a much more direct connection with my civilian job, so I could justify it there. Either way, I think experience, even if you know you got a major in political science and you want to get into the space industry, there's a lot of opportunity even for that. Obviously, you won't be designing satellites, but you'll be working with potentially international organizations or companies that span the globe. You could be doing business development. You could be doing, if you're a lawyer, you could be looking at new space law that's coming out. So almost any degree can have applications in the space sector. In fact, the president of spaceflight, my company, he's a lawyer by training, worked for Microsoft for many years. He had the space bug and he got into it about 10 years ago. And look what he's doing now. He's completely disrupting the space community. So, and it's creative disruption too. But yeah, so it for people who don't think they have the right background, if you have an interest and you have skills, apply it as applicable to the space industry and you can make it.
You know, so when you said that about your CEO, it made me think of I've done a bunch of interviews in the kind of blockchain crypto space. And again, tell me if I'm if I'm getting warm here, but there's part like I see a lot of overlap in that. First of all, people in the blockchain space seem very mission driven. Like this is, you know, the people who are really into this, this is about changing the world. And I see a lot of that in your industry, or I project that at least. And then second, it's in these blockchain conversations, I realized, man, this is the Wild West. You know, a veteran coming out of active duty, this space is not that old. So someone who comes from active duty, you're maybe 5 years behind at most. And I'm seeing that the space industry is relatively new, that someone can have a legal background and after 10 years be a leading expert in the field. Do you, I mean, could you speak to that? Is that true? Is that fair?
Oh, it's definitely true. There's so much growth right now in the commercial space sector in the United States. A couple other countries are lagging behind, but some are picking it up. There's a lot of projections from the big industry reviewers that the space industry, the commercial side, is going to exceed what is spent on the defense and civil side very shortly. So you're going to see a lot of growth in the space sector, but no one knows exactly how that growth is going to happen and what those key industries are. I think there's a lot, and everyone knows communication and remote observation. That's definitely part of it. But there's so many small companies out there with very creative business concepts. It'll be interesting to see how they succeed. And regardless of what your background is, there's always positions in those new companies that are looking for people with skills that are learned in the military.
And I want to come back to the landscape because I'm really curious about that. But let me just back up because I feel like we touched on one aspect of what spaceflight industries does, which is the Uber for space.
For small satellites.
For small satellites. But it seems like there is another aspect because it's to look at our planet in real time in every spectrum. What is that about?
So spaceflight, the launch side, is part of Spaceflight Industries. Spaceflight Industries has another company called Black Sky. So it's our sister company. We're in the same building. Black Sky is definitely on the forefront of remote commercial observation of the Earth. So they basically, instead of building satellites the size of school buses, they're building the satellites the size of mini fridges that can image the Earth and get about 1 meter resolution. But it's not just having Earth observation. There's a lot of companies that do that kind of stuff, like DigiGlobe, Planet. So the key thing, discriminator with Black Sky, is the intelligence fusion with open source media, news reports, Twitter feeds, Facebook. They have algorithms that look at all of these open source media platforms and pick up on key phrases at key locations. So if, for example, you start seeing the word earthquake or shake in the region of Anchorage, Alaska, that will automatically task spacecraft to start taking pictures of that site. So by the time the rest of the world knows an earthquake hit Alaska, there's already pictures that can be analyzed for damage assessments, as well as applying relief efforts as well. And you can apply that to other things, critical infrastructure. If you see, mobs, chaos, attack on at geolocated where a critical infrastructure asset is, that will automatically task the constellation to start taking pictures. And it's not just visual pictures. We have partnered with other companies that do synthetic aperture radar and other types of imaging so that we can have a holistic view of what's going on at that site when an incident happens. Mm-hmm. So that's what Black Sky is doing.
That's so exciting. I mean, the implications of it seems like this automated way of using all of this, like Twitter activity, to say, hey, I remember a talk by Eric Schmidt forever ago where he said, they saw Google searches of flu in Portland, and they were able to detect and tip off the public systems to be able to support that. And what you're doing is on such a crazier scale, providing that visual insight immediately is really crazy.
Yeah, it's really neat, and it's already been used several times, such as relocating refugees in Syria. We were contacted by NGOs to assist there because they didn't know the right path to avoid all the conflict areas. So they used real-time intelligence fused with our platform in order to find a safe route to get out of the war zone. So it's neat seeing real-life applications for this technology to help people.
Mm. And for listeners, I'm going to throw in the show notes for this. I did forever ago. One of the first episodes I did was with a friend of mine, John Finnick. I don't know if you know the company Skybox Imaging.
Yes,
Skybox,
very familiar with them.
Yeah, they were bought by Google. They were doing something similar. You know, from my vantage point, it all seems similar, but maybe not too similar. But I'll add that to the show notes for listeners. It's another story in this space. I'll also add all the crypto ones. So you spoke earlier about, you know, there's communication, there's law, space law. Could you kind of break down the industry? And, you know, sometimes when I think of the finance industry, from my 10,000 foot view, I'm like, okay, well, there's private wealth management, there's private equity, there's investment banking, there's hedge funds. Could you kind of, because this is such a rapidly developing industry, how do you view it in terms of either key players or kind of functional areas? And you already spoke about there's, you know, lots of little guys trying lots of different applications. But just to give a little bit of structure, how do you view this space?
The way I would break it down, first and foremost, is the transportation piece. Mm-hmm. That's the rockets to actually get you to space, because you could have the best satellite in the world, but if it can't get to space, it's not going to do you much good. So you have a lot of, you know, launch vehicle providers is what we call them, the guys who build the rockets. And there's new ones emerging, it seems like, almost every couple weeks. So it'll be interesting to see who actually makes it to commercial operations. Then you have the hardware builders, the people who build the thrusters, the spacecraft buses, the sensors. So all the hardware that actually goes into what's going onto orbit. Then you have the people who have applications in space. So sometimes they don't build hardware, they don't buy the rocket launches, but they want to do stuff in space. And they come up with the business concepts, and then they sub out the building of the spacecraft and the launch and stuff like that. So those are some of the ones like Intelsat for communications, or Skybox, which is now owned by Planet for Earth imaging. So they're the ones who come up with the business concepts, and they find the right hardware in order to achieve those objectives. Then you have a lot of ancillary sectors. There's the licensing, which is mostly run by government. You have insurance. You have logistics, launch site preparation. So a lot of that. But the main three, again, rockets, the satellites, hardware, and then the applications in space.
If someone listening is interested in this, how would you recommend them figuring out? Because it's just a reminder to me, right? Like, I love this space, and I'm very unaware of a lot of the different aspects. Like, when you explain it, it makes sense. But before this call, I couldn't have teased those out. So you kind of mentioned Aviation Week and space technology and space news. How else – any other resources to help people figure out if this is right for them?
There's different websites and blogs that could be helpful. If you want to get really technical, you could go to NASASpaceflight.com. It's not a NASA website, but it has a lot of smart people on it talking in real detail, technical detail about various launch systems and space companies. I found that very useful. But part of it is just jumping into the industry. If you have the opportunity to take a job in the space industry, that's where you're going to learn most of what it is. Just like you mentioned all the stuff about finance that I had no idea about. You have to kind of get in the industry to really fully understand it. And if it turns out it's not for you, well, the great thing about the civilian world is you could go find a job somewhere else.
Such great advice. I mean, that's great advice regardless of your career. And I think that a lot of the people I speak with, there's trepidation, there's some hesitation, which is understandable. It's you know, most of our military experience was you select one thing and you're on that path for the long haul. And it's great. It's a great reminder. Like, just the civilian world is a buffet. You try something, you don't like it, you go back for more. Unlimited plates. You can go back as many times as you want, switch as many times as you want. And I love that thought of just diving in and getting that hands-on experience and seeing if it's right for you. Do you have any thoughts for this sort of career path? I know we've kind of touched on this already, but any indications why someone in the military may love this, and any indications why they may not like this sort of career path?
Well, you mentioned earlier that people with operations experience are good in these kind of jobs, and I agree because there's a lot of chaos going on in this industry right now, and I think military people are used to dealing with chaos and very volatile environments, and that's I think one reason why I thrive in this community, because you can have a rocket that blows up, and now all the customers you had on that rocket, you have to find rides on different rockets, or customers aren't ready. There's so many things where a test goes bad. There's just a lot of variability on a day-to-day basis that keeps it both interesting and engaged. So if you're looking for doing the same thing day in and day out, this is not the industry for you. But it also gives you the opportunity to really participate in the next steps of mankind's exploration in the solar system, which I think is really neat. Even the when I worked a Falcon 9 mission out at Vandenberg Air Force Base this past fall, the guys who are working on some of the machinery at the launch site, they are super proud to be SpaceX employees and working and contributing in their fashion for this industry. And about a third of them were veterans.
Wow, that's awesome. That's cool. I can sense the camaraderie of like so many different players in the space, but this shared sense of purpose, which is, what I would relate to kind of Air Force, Army. It's kind of like there's
Yes.
that, we're doing different things, but we're all trying to head to the same spot.
Yeah, definitely.
What about, I saw that spaceflight recently launched a Falcon 9 with 64 spacecraft, which was a new US record. Can you tell us more about that launch?
I can tell you a lot about it because I was running that mission. So that was it. The concept was to have a dedicated rideshare mission. That means that spaceflight bought the rocket. There was no one satellite prime in the example I used earlier, that 900-pound satellite, and then we buy some extra space. In this case, everyone was a rideshare. Not a single customer owned the rocket. We owned the rocket, and that gave us the flexibility of putting on anyone that we could on this rocket. So we had 15 microsatellites. Those are satellites about the size of a mini fridge. And then we had 49 CubeSats, which are ones that look like about the size of a loaf of bread, all the way down to the size of a cell phone. So it was a very complicated launch, not just because there are 64 spacecraft, but there were 53 different customers on this mission. So we had to get them all ready at the same time to the same place so they could integrate, because we had 60 days from start until launch to get them all in their dispensers, their separation systems, get them on the rocket. It was a very complex but well-orchestrated campaign. It was record-breaking in the fact that no one has launched this many satellites from the U.S. before. Russia and India have launched more total number of satellites on a couple missions, but no one has launched this many customers at one time before. And it really opened the door to access to space for a lot of companies. About half these companies, this was their first satellites, and now they're going on to build more satellites after the success of that mission. So it's really enabling for the small space community.
And when you're in charge, is that like a month period that you're kind of on location getting ready for this, or what's that lead up look like?
Yeah, so the mission, it was over the course of 3 years. And for the first year, one of my coworkers was running it, getting it stood up. And then I took over the mission for the last year and a half. And that was where a lot of the logistics was going on. But really, the last 60 days was the heavy hitting part. We spent about 20 days at our Auburn integration facility. That's Auburn, Washington, just south of Seattle, putting all the CubeSats in their dispensers and loading it onto the structures. Then we shipped everything down to Vandenberg, and we were there for about 45 days total. Was originally going to be 30 days to do the launch campaign, but then there were some issues that had to be addressed. Like I told you, it's an operations environment, so things come up. And so we end up spending about 45 days down there before launching. But when it comes to launching, you want to make sure everything is right. If you need to take a few extra days, you take a few extra days.
I can see why so many people in this space are prior military, because the kind of the deployment cadence, the extreme environment of things changing, but also more than most of the people I've interviewed, you are continuing to operate in an environment with extreme consequences, and it's not the it doesn't seem like at least it's the loss of life that many people saw in the military. But in terms of billions of dollars of equipment, I can't think of a single industry that I've interviewed so far that's like that, where the consequences are very, very financially high.
Yeah, they really are. For that launch, which we called SSOA, for Sun Synchronous Orbit A, between all the spacecraft and the rocket, it was probably around $225 million worth of equipment on that mission. So you're right, the financial consequences are extremely high. If we delayed our launch even by a few more days, there could have been spacecraft that would have had to pull off the mission for various reasons. Now, but you also mentioned, you know, consequences of life. So in this industry, I've had people say, Jeff, how can you stay so cool when, you know, things seem to be going crazy? And I ask the simple question, is anyone going to die if we don't get this done today? Hmm. And for a lot of civilians, that just kind of blows their mind. They're like, what? I didn't think of it in that terms. Like, well, that's the terms I had, you know, back when I was active duty in Afghanistan and Iraq. You had to think about those things. So, no one's going to die, but there are definitely going to be consequences if you don't get things done right.
That's great. I love that. I love that perspective. It makes me feel guilty about freaking out at 3 a.m. about not having milk for my baby. I'm like, yeah, I guess he's not going to die. He's need to have a little bit of composure here.
I don't know if your spouse would agree with that, though. So that's a different risk factor.
That's true. You know, one thing that I don't think you mentioned when you talked about the industry is this whole thought of space tourism and human space flight. What is your view on that? Is that just ways out? Is that something that's even on the radar or a legitimate industry right now? Or where does that fit in?
It's just around the corner. Now, my company doesn't deal with human space flight right now, but there are a lot of companies that do. Virgin Galactic, they're the ones launching Spaceship Two. They've had several successful test flights this year. Sir Richard Branson, who owns the company, he intends to fly to suborbit this year on board the space plane. So that means that puts you into space for about 8 minutes or so. So he's already sold some 600 tickets on his vehicle. So that's really great there. And then recently, SpaceX had a successful test of their Crewed Dragon capsule. So that's a capsule that could hold 7 astronauts. It's designed to go to the International Space Station, but there's other applications beyond that as well. And NASA's still working on their Orion capsule. And that's one that's supposed to take humans back to the moon or maybe even further. And that's well on its way. They're just waiting for the rocket to get ready. It really is right around the corner. SpaceX has already booked one customer who wants to fly around the moon. So that's going to happen. Is the moon flight going to happen this year? Probably not. But suborbital tourism and commercial companies ferrying people up to the International Space Station, that will happen this year. And then there's other companies. Robert Bigelow, the big hotel guy, he has plans to build hotels in space. There's already a test segment on the International Space Station to test out his design, and it's worked very well. So you can see commercial space stations coming online in the next few years as well. So I think humanity has been in space continuously since the International Space Station was first commissioned about 15 years ago. And I think we're going to continue that and just expand it. Mm.
Any book recommendations, sci-fi or otherwise, that we can geek out on for a second?
Oh, well, let's see. The Martian was an absolutely great book. The movie's all right, but the book was great. The technology was spot on. It highlights some of the difficulties that space engineering is involves with space engineering. Any book about the Apollo astronauts is an awesome reading. What they did with the technology they had was incredible. Including some of the early rocketeers like Wernher von Braun. Absolutely amazing and incredible with what they did with the technology they had. And then science fiction. I'm a big fan of David Weber, author of the Honor Harrington series. That's more of a military science fiction in space. Great stories and really cool space stuff that we will never see in our lifetimes. But it's still interesting to think that could be the future. Mm.
That's great. One that I'll add to the list. I don't know if you've read Mary Roach's book, Packing for Mars. Mary Roach does a lot of like kind of documentary writing, but it was interesting for me. It was like the insight I took away, right or wrong, was like the early days of space exploration was kind of the jet fighter pilot mentality of like, I mean, just you think of what they accomplished. And then a lot more recently, it's so systematized and so safe. It's almost like experience camping for a very, very long time is one of your best assets, because she goes through what these astronauts go through. And it's a lot of it's pretty gross. You know, there's just a lot you give up when you're in space for an extended period of time.
Awesome. Yeah, I've not read that book, but it sounds like it's right on track. It's space travel is definitely glamorized in the movies, which is good because it gets people excited about it. But like military operations, I mean, when you're deployed, how much of it is intense combat? Very, very little. It's a lot of boardroom punctured by moments of brief excitement. So we'll see.
I bet. Well, last question I have is just, what have we not talked about that you want to make sure listeners know before we wrap up?
Well, I would say, so people who are interested in transitioning to this field, don't be afraid to pursue your dreams. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out. I got that. But sometimes it does. And don't let any feelings of inadequacy or unpreparedness prevent you from pursuing what you are interested in and what you are passionate about. And you'll find the right path that is open to you. The first job I took in this industry wasn't my ideal job. I wanted to be building spacecraft, but the only job that I had available was working at a launch complex. It turned out to be a great experience. It got my foot in the door so I could really understand the industry and lead me to what I'm doing now, which is exactly what I wanted to be doing. So don't be afraid to take those steps. It might not be the perfect job right out the gate. That's okay. Get your foot in the door, learn the industry, understand what you really want, and go from there.
I love that. I mean, I think as I kind of do the postmortem on my own career to date, I wish that my post-military self was more patient. I think I wanted to get somewhere right away. And in retrospect, I see it's like lily pads. It's kind of you take one leap and one leap and one leap. And so what I love about what you're saying is I love the equal parts having people have that freedom to dream, to think big and to go after it, and then tempering that with persistence and patience of like, if you don't get it, you can get your foot in the door, and you never know what that will lead to. Let me just actually ask one other question. How did, because you had the initial job with the Alaska company that I'm blanking on the name, how did you ultimately get to spaceflight? Like, how did that opportunity come about to spaceflight industries?
Well, so I loved Alaska Aerospace, great company to work for. They were having a lull in launches back about 3 years ago, and that's when I started looking for other opportunities just to keep me fresh, keep me challenged. And I actually looked up some old friends on LinkedIn, and one of those old friends used to work with me at the Operationally Responsive Space Office at Kirtland Air Force Base, and he had recently joined this company called Spaceflight. So I just reached out to him and said, hey, I'm looking for a transition. You guys got anything available? And sure enough, he said, yeah, we do. I also put out applications to some of the bigger companies, you know, even in the Denver area with Lockheed, with the Boeings, Orbital, now Northrop Grumman. And those going through their websites, they have a lot of information, but I didn't get a lot of feedback. In fact, got zero feedback. It was the personal connections on LinkedIn that helped me out and find this job.
That's great. And I think of the, you know, 260 plus interviews I've done, it's amazing how often an opportunity comes about through networking in general, or more specifically LinkedIn. And it's just a way to find out about opportunities and a way to have an edge over just going through the front door. So that's great that that's how it came about. Well, Jeff, thank you for your time today. Thank you for taking time away from your vacation in Hawaii. I can't believe I'm in cold Denver right now, so it's easy to be indoor for a call like this. But if I was in Hawaii, it'd be more difficult. And I just really appreciate your perspective and the work that you're doing. I think that this is going to be relevant to a lot of our listeners.
Well, thank you very much, Justin, for having me on. It's been great to share my experiences. I'm probably taking the road less traveled, especially for Army infantrymen. But I definitely want to share my experiences and help our veterans out there. Veterans, let me talk to you. You got a lot of experience, a lot of great training, a lot of motivation and dedication to serve this country. There's companies out there that would be very happy to have you. So don't be afraid of transition. Is it all great? No, sometimes it's a little bit tough, but you got the raw materials to help continuing to serve this country, whether it's in the civilian sector or in the military or commercial.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jeff.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Justin.
Surface, surface.
Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.